and stimulation for your brain. This is the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
For the third time in just 2 weeks, I have spent the better part of a day reviewing video footage involving allegations of excessive use by members of the Atlanta Police Department. Tragically, the most recent incident involved the fatal shooting of a 27-year-old man, Rayshard Brooks. What has become abundantly clear over the last couple of weeks in Atlanta is that while we have a police force full of men and women who work alongside our communities with honor, respect, and dignity, there has been a disconnect with what our expectations are and should be as it relates to interactions with our officers and the communities in which they are entrusted to protect. Chief Erica Shields has been a solid member of APD for over two decades and has a deep and abiding love for the people of Atlanta. And because of her desire that Atlanta be a model of what meaningful reform should look like across this country, Chief Shields has offered to immediately step aside as police chief so that the city may move forward with urgency in rebuilding the trust so desperately needed throughout our community.
So that is from the mayor of Atlanta, who is incidentally now considered to be on the relatively short list as a possible vice presidential nominee for Joe Biden. But in Atlanta, Chief Shields said, out of a deep and abiding love for the city and this department, I offered to step aside as police chief. This is after the Georgia NAACP had called on her to resign after this incident. Joining us now is a woman who knows everything that's going on in Georgia. She makes it her business to know it. She is a widely renowned and very well-listened-to talk radio host and a dear friend of us on the show, Martha Zoller from WDUN down in North Georgia. Hello, Martha. Wow.
Hey, Lisa. It's great to be with you.
So tell us a little bit of the facts that immediately precipitated this. What happened at that Wendy's? What happened?
Yeah, so this gentleman, Mr. Brooks, was in the drive-thru line, and he passed out in his car. And so you know, drive-thrus are very busy right now because the dining rooms are not open, and so it created a line that backed up out into the street. And the Wendy's folks, the management, called the police to come and check it out. And so they came, and really for about 20 minutes, it was a what you would call a textbook kind of stop. He did the field sobriety test. He did the breathalyzer, which was 0.108. They had a back and forth conversation that seemed to be going, you know, the way it should go. When the police said to him that he would have to, he could not drive himself home, that they needed to take him to get a blood test, because, you know, the breathalyzer is not 100% accurate, but it's what they have out in the field. So they wanted to take him into the station. That's when he started fighting them, fighting the police. He got a hold of the police's taser. He tased one of the officers in the face and then ran. When he ran across the parking lot, he turned back, straightening his arm out, and that's when he was shot. Now, you know, this is one of those borderline kind of cases in that, you know, you don't know what he had in his hand. It turned out he had the taser in his hand. But the police also had his ID and his vehicle. And he did have a long rap sheet. He was probably going to, he would have been breaking probation to be able to do this. And in this case, and might have ended up his concern. Maybe he ran because he didn't want to go back to jail. I don't know what those circumstances are, but in my view, and I tend to fall on the side of the police, but in my view, since they had his ID, they had his car, why did they feel like they needed to use deadly force in this case? And I think that's the decision that's going to have to be made by the district attorney. Now, on the political side, the district attorney, for the first time in his career, is in a runoff against somebody who has worked for him for 20 years that says he's corrupt. And so we've got this kind of political tension underneath this, you know, that makes it a little harder to look at. Then the next night they had protests, and somebody, they believe the arsonist was this person that was dressed all in black with a hoodie, appears to be a white person, but all you can see is their eyes, you know, the skin around their eyes, so it's, mm-hmm. it's hard to tell. But it was like 85 degrees on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Why you're in covered in, you know, covered up like that, and they broke the windows out, burned the Wendy's to the ground, kept the fire trucks from getting there so that it would be a complete and total loss. My problem with that is a lot of things. The violence, number one. But number two, I know where that Wendy's is. It's in a tough neighborhood. Probably 25 or 30 people work there over the course of a week. Most of those people walk there to work. I'm very familiar with that Wendy's because I used to work in that neighborhood. And so not only do you have this horrible thing that happened, but now you got 25 families out of work.
And if you have a white person doing it, then maybe you have to wonder, are they trying to do it so to blame it on a stereotypical looting kind of a thing where very stereotypically black people have been blamed for looting their own neighborhoods?
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, in a lot of these cases, when you drill down on the video of the looting, I'm not saying mm-hmm. that there was no black folks looting. I'm not saying that. But you do, it does appear that it's getting spiked by these, by what appear to be young white people,
yeah.
that,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was a case where a Starbucks was being tagged by these two white girls, and this black girl comes up and goes, what are you doing this for? We're going to get blamed for this if
right.
you're doing it. So,
right.
and I'm not saying there should be that definition, white versus black, but you know, it is, you know, I support peaceful protest every day, all day, if you want to do it. I have a real problem when it crosses the line and you destroy property, or in the case of Saturday night, they got out on the interstate and were blocking traffic for hours. That's not only dangerous, but it's wrong to do that. And I just think they need, you know, I don't think it helps the cause when you destroy property.
Well, I think that we all agree on that. So let's just move back a little bit to this Erica Shields. So she's a woman, she's
yes.
a white woman. She's the first gay leader, which for whatever reason we're always now tagging ourselves by our group.
Right, right.
So, okay, and I guess because she's gay, she's experienced, we can assume, her own form of discrimination. So maybe she was considered to be a, quote, progressive police officer. And apparently, you know, her own leadership was not the problem here per se. But you know, the buck stops at whoever is at the top, and she's at the top. And so this Officer Rolfe was summarily fired. I don't know whether or not he's been charged, but he has been fired. And that already
is like... He hasn't
been
charged yet.
Right, but that's already a big thing that he's been let go. And the mayor is not happy. And I think what it begs the question, right, because you start out by saying for 20 minutes it looks textbook. I was reading on Facebook and different social media that people are saying, well, if he was a white guy who had too much to drink in a car that was blocking a Wendy's lane, that maybe the police would have offered him a ride home and wouldn't have moved to handcuff him and take him out of his car. It was the physical one-on-one, right? This idea that he had to be cuffed, or as you said, he had a rap sheet and he didn't maybe want to go back to jail. But you know what it is to me, Martha, and this is the issue of power and control and consequence, right? So in a split second, a police officer has to make a decision. Well, I've started a bust. Is it more important for me to complete the bust and get this guy or let him run himself ragged and we pick him up tomorrow or we pick him up in 2 hours or we somehow get him because he
right.
doesn't have a car
right.
to run away with, right? Do I let it go to fight another day for something that was a nonviolent offense and I've already prevented him from driving drunk, right? Because the reason I pulled him over is so that he wouldn't drive drunk, right? That's the offense, not being drunk, but
right.
driving drunk. So he's not
right.
supposed to drive drunk because he could kill somebody else. Well, I've already done that. I've dismantled his weapon. He can't drive drunk anymore. I have the car. But what happens is in the moment, and I don't know if this is police training, I don't know if this is ego, I don't know if this is testosterone, I don't know what this is, but it seems like in the moment the police always have to win. They always have to get the guy that they started to get, whether they have to shoot him or not. They never let him go, even if it's a nonviolent offense and they've removed the way that he can do damage. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I do. And 2 points on that. Since he had stolen the taser, there might have been the concern that he'd run off and hurt somebody with the taser, and would they be responsible?
That's a good point.
You know,
that's a good point.
That's one point. But the second point is, to your point, is that let him go, pick him up another day, and here's where the reforms need to happen as far as police officers. In too many police departments across this country, they still will hire you with only a GED. Okay, now I have great respect for people that drop out of school and get their GED. Okay, but they will still hire folks with a GED. The starting salaries are very low. Okay, in most places, the training is not what it needs to be. There's a lot of work that needs to be done here. But you're right that you know, and as by all accounts, by the body cam and all that, he got out of the car. He cooperated up until the point they said they were going to take him in to do a blood test.
And why did they have to do that, right? Why did they have to do that? Could they have insisted? Go ahead.
Yeah, if they were going to get him on DUI, the breathalyzer doesn't stand up in court. That's the only reason I can think of. You got to have a blood test on top of that. But I think this. I think initially by looking at the way he ran away and then turned around and pointed towards them, not knowing what he had in his hand, I kind of was on the side of the police.
Okay.
But now that I found out they had his ID and they had his vehicle, which I should have known, but I didn't think about until I read the report. If they had his ID and his vehicle, let him go and pick him up later. That's what they should have done. And so I think that this officer will be charged. Now, of course, the police union is going to challenge him being summarily fired without due process.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to challenge that. And they're going to challenge it in the case 2 weeks ago with the two college students that were tased, that were at the protest, that the 16-year and 22-year police officers were fired within 24 hours. They're going to challenge that, too, because they're going to say, where's our due process, right? So it's a challenge all the way around, and we've got to, as people, talk to each other. We're going to our corners, and we're not talking to each other, and we've got to try to be reasonable and say, like you said a moment ago, that's a fair point. How do we move forward with this?
So Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, I never heard of her before all of this unrest in Atlanta. But she is making quite a name for herself as being what I would call a very sensible, boots on the ground, bright lady, doing the best she can in a city in turmoil right now. And, you know, Atlanta
really
represents. Yeah, go ahead, tell us.
She really is. She's working well with the governor, too. I mean, they're different parties. They don't get along. But the mayor's office literally is right next door to the Georgia Capitol. So they see each other a lot. And they're working together really well. I mean, the governor's there to help her whenever she asks for help, because that's kind of the way it works. You know, the governor doesn't come in with his resources unless the mayor says, hey, I need your resources. And they've worked together well. I think what's interesting about this from the inside baseball kind of viewpoint is that Stacey Abrams is also from Atlanta. She's also a person that's been considered in the past. But no one's talking about Stacey Abrams anymore now that Mayor Bottoms. And they come from different political camps. So it's, even though they're both Democrats, they're different. Their mentors are different. And one's from the Kasim Reed camp and the other one's from, you know, the other camp. And so it's kind of interesting to see the political side of all of this.
Yes.
But, yeah, Mayor Bottoms has done a great job. I still think if I were to guess on Joe Biden, when it comes right down to it, Joe Biden is an establishment guy. He was in the Senate since he was 29 years old. He's going to probably go with one of the senators, I think, that
ran against
him.
I think he's going to go with Kamala Harris.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But I was thinking that, you know, there's one of those senators. He's going to go with a more establishment pick. It's just my view, because he's that kind of guy. I mean, he's not a take a risk kind of guy as far as how he's done things in the past.
But she is making quite a name for herself on the national stage, this Keisha Lance. And she may run for governor of Georgia one day, too. You never know. She could.
You never know. And she is really easy to work with. Her team is very easy to work with. And, you know, they know I'm a conservative, radio host, and they communicate with me. We're going to have her on the program in the next week or so. We're still working on a time for that. So she understands how all of this works, and she's done a good job, I think, under the circumstances.
Let me ask you one more thing, Martha Zoller, as long as I have you on, because after all, Atlanta, we can't speak about Gone with the Wind without Atlanta. The premiere was Atlanta,
oh my
the
God.
Burning of Atlanta, Gone with the Wind. I mean, Gone with the Wind, one of my favorite movies of all time. Can I say that anymore? As a movie, as an entertainment vehicle, I'm not suggesting it is the only version of history by any means, but as a story, as an entertaining story, it really was tops when I was growing up, one of my favorite movies.
I don't think it glorified slavery. I think it presented things the way they were, and certainly showed most of the movie actually is spent in the time after the Civil War and how things, you know, and it depicted some very true, horrible things that happened. You know, it's a classic movie. Do we have to rewrite history? We can't rewrite history, Lisa. It's not possible to do so. And I read the book. I've seen the movie. I have talked with friends of mine of color who don't understand the movie. You know what I mean? They don't understand why people like the movie. But I get that. But that's why we have choice in that kind of thing. You can watch what you want to watch or not.
Yeah, you know what was really interesting, though, speaking of Gone with the Wind, because we're going to keep this conversation going today because so many people want to talk about it. David O. Selznick changed the book in response to many people of color at that time who were very worried that a literal depiction of the book was going to incite racism further. For example, and this I didn't know, you know, there was that, remember that famous... carriage ride that she makes by herself through the shanty town, and she's ultimately saved by a former black slave who comes to save her from a would-be rapist. It turns out in the book the would-be rapists were blacks, but the David O. Selznick changed it to whites because he did not want to further inflame any kind of racial stereotypes. I thought that was really interesting. I didn't know that.
Turned it into a carpetbagger, one of those carpetbaggers, you know, in the shanty towns. And and look, I can't even imagine, you know, that's what I try to keep in perspective with everything that's happening now. This is a long way from a civil war. People like to use that term around, but we're in difficult times right now, Lisa, and it's depressing, really. But I think if we keep focused on acknowledging what's right and wrong and trying not to be as partisan about it, which is hard to do, but you got to do it because this is America we're talking about. And, you know, I'm going to keep talking about Gone with the Wind as being a great American book. It is a great American work of literature. And the movie was the first, I think, full-length color movie that was released. So on a number of levels, it was a groundbreaking movie. So,
well, it was 1927 was Jazz Singer, but 1939 was a
well,
great
Jazz Singer
year for
was
movies.
In color. It wasn't color though. Jazz Singer wasn't in color. Gone with the Wind was the first full length in color movie. And
Technicolor movie, really?
Yeah, and what's interesting too is Hattie McDaniel, who won the Oscar for
That's
playing
what
Mammy.
I wanted to talk about.
You know,
yes, absolutely.
She was criticized for the role she played. She was one of the most successful black actors of her day and died fairly young. But she, you know, she was like saying to colleagues who said, look, these are the only parts that are available. I have to feed my family. And she always played the part of the domestic very independently, and she won an Oscar for that. And you know, she
and do you know that in her Oscar speech she said, do you know what she said in her Oscar speech? She said, I just was struck by this. She said, I want to thank you on behalf of my race.
Yep.
It was very interesting.
Well, and it's that feeling when you are in a minority, whether women aren't a minority, but women feel this too, or African Americans or Hispanics or whatever. You feel like if you're out there in front, that you are representing more than just yourself, which is true. There is much more pressure on you. I understand that. I have a little taste of it being a female in politics, but not the same, not exactly the
same.
Well,
that's why, that's why getting back to Erica Shields, the fact that she's proud to say that she's gay and a chief of a major city police force, that that was important to say for that reason. All right, Martha Zoller, yeah. such a pleasure to have you on today. So much to talk about. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate
Thanks, Lisa.
It. Always a pleasure. We'll be right back after these messages.